Welcome to WonderCast, a community collaborative podcast supporting families navigating the complexities of chronic illness. In a continued celebration on the awesomeness of moms this month, our episode today features another Wonders and Worries family. Listen in as we meet this incredible mom, hear of her balance of recurrent disease and the ways she continues to support her family and the community at large. This is Tiffany.
Hi, everyone, and thanks for listening. My name is Tiffany, and I'm so excited to be here today. I'm a little bit nervous, a little bit excited. A little bit about me. I am 35 this year. My kids, I have a boy. He is 4 years old, and he's currently in preschool. And I have a daughter. She is seven, almost eight. She'll be eight in May, and she's in second grade right now. I have had cancer for almost 4 years now, so I found out when I was 31. I think that, like many of us parents and mothers out here, that we try not to be defined by cancer. And I can remember very distinctly, I went to MD Anderson and I was asking them, what can I do? How can I surpass this? Well, you know, the people that live for a long time, what makes them different? And the lady there, she told me, she said, the people that I see that live the longest, it's because they are not defined by their illness. They don't let it define them. They are not person with cancer. They are person, right? And so I try my hardest to make sure that I do other things as well. I started volunteering actually with Wonders and Worries because I'm so passionate about the mission that they do and personally how they've helped our children. And I also try to stay busy volunteering at the school with the kids and with the PTO. And then, of course, like many of us out there, I'm also, you know, chief family financial officer and laundry doer and booger catcher and, you know, all of those other things. I think we all wear many, many hats. And one of them is that I have cancer.
Do you want to kind of just share how you found out you had cancer? And kind of what your treatment protocol looked like initially and how it's changed now.
Yeah, absolutely. It was the week of our son's first birthday, so almost 4 years ago now. And I'd been having some trouble and I went to the OB and, you know, I was just, you know, like not even a year post birth. So, you know, I kind of expected bumps. I went to the OB and she took a look and she said, okay, something's not right here. And then she referred me to get an ultrasound and they did the ultrasound and the ultrasound person said, I think you need to go for a CT scan. And I can remember very distinctly sitting in that waiting room for that CT scan. And I hadn't even, you know, gotten the news yet. And I turned to my grandmother who is, she's a rock in my life. And she was sitting with me and I said, oh, I just never saw my life ending this way. I always thought I would live longer than my husband. Most of the women in our family do. And she said, you don't even know you have cancer yet. And I was like, I know, you know, it's just like something in my bones. I could feel it. And, you know, that's one of the things that I'll say is like, one of the silver linings of this process is it's helped me trust my body and my gut a little bit more. I feel like sometimes we are so raised to not trust the way that we are feeling or not express the way that we are feeling, that it's hard for us to do so. In that moment, I knew. And since then, I've been learning a little bit more to trust myself and trust my body and really listen when it says, you're tired, something's not right, you know, those things. I found out. And of course, it came back. They were like, yes, you have cancer. And it was soul crushing. The cancer that I have is primary peritoneal. They told me it was either stage 3 or stage 4. They wouldn't know until they opened me up for surgery. They said primary peritoneal is so rare. Only 6 in a million people who have cancer get it. So they just treat it like ovarian because it has the same cell type as ovarian, which as somebody who doesn't have ovarian cancer, I can say personally, is kind of frustrating. But I understand they can't do entire specialized treatments just for a subset of people who have something very rare. They told me all this information and they told me, you know, you need chemotherapy. They said people with ovarian Anybody who has it, I'm sure you know that the statistics are not great. They told me there was an 80% chance that it would reoccur in the next 5 years. As somebody at the time who had a one-year-old and a four-year-old, I said, I'm sorry, what? Like, I've got too much to do. I've got little kids. I've got a life ahead of me. I've got hopefully many more years with a husband and grandkids and watching my kids grow up and get married. I'm like, I'm not ready for this, you know, like, and it all happened so quickly. I just remember how quick it was, you know, between finding out and getting my port and getting my first treatment was only a week. And that was part of my own pace setting because I bugged everybody. Okay, when am I getting in? When am I going to see somebody? But still, I can remember sitting there and they do the chemo 101 where they tell you about chemo and how it happens and how it works. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is so much information. I can't even process it or remember it all right now. I can remember being in the first days, like very overwhelmed, very shocked, very, you know, almost like, are you kidding me right now? You know, like, this is a joke, right? So somebody tell me this is a joke. This isn't happening. So that was kind of the first experience with it.
Also, you had just gone through having your son the past year. When you were having all of your ultrasounds, because it is a slow-growing cancer, none of that showed up on any of your ultrasounds that you had for your son.
No. Can you believe that? None of that showed up. And you know, the weird thing, though, was in going back through this medical history, I asked ARC for a dump of everything from my entire medical history. And those older ultrasounds from when I was pregnant, CT scans from when I was having like hip trouble, like all of those things from years ago, none of them had any tumors or anything else. The only thing that I did see, which was interesting, was back 4 years before I got pregnant, in one of my CT scans, they did mention a thickening in my pelvis wall and an increase in pelvic free fluid is what they call it. And the way that I understand it, of course, I'm not a doctor, but the way that I understand it is that when you get this type of cancer, it can prevent your body from rotating that abdominal fluid. And so you get kind of a thickening of the walls in there and also a buildup of what they call that free fluid in your pelvis. So I asked my doctor at MD Anderson, I said, here's the scan from 4 years ago. Is there a chance I had cancer then? She said, yeah. She said, you know, it's very likely you could have had cancer then and we just never knew it. And they didn't see it on your ultrasounds. They didn't see it when you gave birth, you know, like
that doesn't show up in abnormal pap smears or like that.
Crazy, right? I did treatment and luckily or unluckily, I don't know, whatever you'd say it, the type of cancer I have is low grade serous carcinoma cell type. And what that means is since it's low grade, it is slow growing. So I'm fortunate in that regard. But the downside to low grade is that it doesn't respond well to treatment. You know, I did 3 rounds of chemo, which is standard before surgery. My biggest tumor, I had a number of tumors in my abdomen or my peritoneum. The biggest one was 4 centimeters and it only shrunk by 1 centimeter. And they said the coating looks the same, the thickness, it's not really going down that much. And they were like, well, we could do surgery now, but if we do surgery now, chances up you're going to end up with a colostomy bag. You know, when you have children, like you're willing to make concessions on your quality of life to be alive for your children, right? And if that's the only way I can stay alive, then okay. But if I have another option, isn't there anything else we can try? I told him, I said, isn't there anything else we can try? I said, can you give me more chemo? He said, you might be the only person I've ever had ask me for more chemotherapy. I was fortunate that he was willing to kind of flex the rules a little bit since I didn't have a standard type of cancer. And he said, okay, if you think you can handle it, we'll do 3 more rounds of chemotherapy. He said, I want to try this new drug. I want you to add on to it. Right then I was doing carboplatin, which is carboplatin, and Taxol, which you'll know, anybody who's familiar with it, means I lost my hair. He said, I want to add on this other drug. It's called Avastin. It was all very scary, especially because the Avastin can inhibit your wound healing, your wound and your recovery. I had already tried the Carbotax all by itself, and I knew it didn't work, and I wasn't happy with the results. So I took a risk, and I gambled, and I said, okay, let's do the Avastin. So we added the Avastin. It did work. When he opened me up, he said it was pretty much gone. He said there was one tiny spot left from that big tumor, but the rest of it was pretty much gone. And we rejoiced, of course. We felt so blessed. We felt so thankful to wake up and to have that good news. They had taken all of my, I'll call them my lady organs. They had taken all of those out. And so following surgery, I was going through menopause. You know, I lost my ovaries, my uterus, all those things, cervix, all those things. I felt very relieved, even all of that. I felt very relieved that I woke up to good news. Things had turned out better than I expected.
So you went through your chemo and your surgery, and then did you follow with some radiation after that point?
No, they said because it's in my period, and I did explore that as an option. I actually went and talked to a radiologist about it. And the way that they explained it to me is that the radiation is really better for a targeted approach, especially in the abdomen, because your bowels don't appreciate radiation. So if they just blasted my entire abdomen with radiation, it would not be great for my body. So he said the radiation would be better for like a targeted approach. If I have, for example, that one big tumor out of all of them, like they could target that one specific thing, but that they thought my best chance was to use the intravenous chemotherapy. And then they kept me on that Avastin for 23 more cycles after that by itself.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So it was a year and a half of chemo, which was quite a bit.
That is quite a bit. And you had tiny children in that, yeah, in that time.
And it was COVID, of all things. I had my surgery March 2020. 3 days after I left the hospital, they shut it down for visitors.
Oh, wow. It was right in that time.
Right in COVID, yeah.
So how did you, just kind of thinking of as a mom with other moms listening to this, how did you balance small children and that long of chemotherapy and not being able to just go put your kids in a drop-in daycare or have all these babysitters come in because we were in a time of lockdown?
Yeah.
How did that look for you?
Oh, it was definitely tough. The things that got me through it, I would say, were therapy. A lot of therapy, a lot of virtual therapy, a lot of Zoom calls with my girlfriends, you know, who still were able to see me as a regular person. And I think that's the beauty of having good friends, right? To still make me laugh and joke. And also to be patient with myself, you know, like to listen to my body. And it's okay to say no when you're not feeling something. It's okay to say, oh, mom needs a nap right now. Why don't you guys go build a pillow fort? And I think one of the saving graces for me during that time period was that I tried to look at it as a blessing, because we're often so busy and so gone out of the house that I had just gotten this devastating news that I might not have that much more time left with my children. And it was both a blessing and, of course, a curse, as you know, as a parent, to be stuck in the house with them for that long. So I tried to focus on it being a positive that I got to be there with them every day. I got to spend more time with them every day. But I did also, I would set an hour or two every afternoon between 1 and 3 p.m. that was our downtime hour. And during that time, I'd have the kids go lay in bed. Our son was still napping and our daughter was not. So she would go and she would sit in bed, either read some books or do a quiet craft or even watch her tablet. And those 2 hours would be my downtime as well. I'd go in the back bedroom, I would color, I would read, I would do whatever I felt like I needed to recharge myself, because I don't think anybody can be on all the time without losing their sanity, right?
Absolutely. I feel like in that space of time, I was not going through any sort of treatment and felt like I was losing my sanity.
So, yeah.
It's more than commendable what you were able to balance. Now, you were still going in for infusions, right? You were doing intravenous.
Yes, that's right.
Chemotherapy. Yep. So when you were doing that with the Avastin, for sure. What did you find? Because at that point, you couldn't have anyone back in the infusion room, could you? Mm-mm. So you would just have someone basically come drop you off, sit in the waiting room, and bring you home.
Yep, that's it. That's it. And my mom was my chemo road buddy. And I so missed her at those sessions, because before then she would come and we'd play cards, or we'd sit and we'd chat, or she'd even read to me while I fell asleep on her. And, you know, that's the other thing I would say, the advice I would get. My husband always wanted to go with me because he loves me, but I took him once and he sat and he worked on his computer the whole time. And I was like, I am so bored. What are you going to, you need to talk to me. I eventually, without hurting his feelings, told him, hey, I'd love for mom to come. And so don't feel bad about who you asked to go with you. It's okay. Remember, it's about you, not about them. And then to be by myself, it was very boring. A good friend of mine bought me this cancer coloring book, and it's filled with all sorts of hilarious, like, curse word drawings. And so I would just sit there and I would color this big, you cancer thing while I'm doing my treatment. And that kind of gave me a little reprieve. And then also, you know, the usual Netflix and all that jazz. I always wanted to start like a card group with the people who were there, but everybody's always, you know, doing their own thing and very tired. So yeah, I never did manage to do that. I think I was too shy. That I really loved, that kind of helped my spirit, is, I don't know if you've ever heard of it, but it's anti-cancer. It's a book, and it really was. I know there's two versions, but, and I've read both of them. I feel like cancer takes so much control away from you. You know, it makes you feel helpless, and it makes you feel like you can't do anything for your journey. You just have to sit back while they do the chemo and everything else. And this is, you know, this is what helped me so much, was reading that book and hearing, and for those of you who haven't heard it, the guy who wrote the book many years ago was someone who found out he had terminal brain cancer, and they told him he had hardly any time left to live, but he was a doctor. And so he knew enough about medicine to be able to go and to research alternatives, things that he could do to help himself around diet, around exercise, around, you know, all these small things that we know are good for us that, you know, we get busy and forget to do. So it was a very powerful book for me then, because it made me feel like I had some sense of control and something that I could do to help my journey. And so it did bring me a lot of light during that time.
What's changed for you with your cancer now?
So with my currents, I told you before, the Avastin was an amazing drug. It did help me go back, and it did shrink everything. But the downside to it, as MD Anderson warned me about, was that it also messes with your wound healing capabilities. And so from that first abdominal surgery, where they cut me from basically 2 inches above my belly button all the way down, so I had like a huge incision, it didn't heal right. I ended up with a 4-inch hernia following that treatment, which I was happy to deal with. And, you know, like, that's not the worst of things that could happen, right? So even though it stunk, it wasn't really that big of a deal to me. But I went to have it repaired, and while I was having it repaired, I thought two things. The first was, hey, maybe I could get a plastic surgeon who could clean up this scar a little bit for me, so it's not so giant the second time around. And also, I thought, if they're going to have me open, I should have someone from oncology there, because, like I said, the cancer that I have doesn't show up great on scans. I had gone to do my appointment the day before my surgery with my oncologist here in Austin. My CA-125 was a 3. Which is really great for anybody who has ovarian cancer. And my scan had come back good. And then I went into surgery, and the person who was filling in that day wasn't my regular doctor, because he didn't have permissions at the hospital where I was having the hernia repair. But I talked to her on the phone. She's very, very smart, very capable, very nice. I was only supposed to be in surgery for an hour and a half, and I woke up 6 hours later, and I knew, something's not right here. And I was like, oh, And they had indeed found 18 more spots of cancer that they had scraped off of my organs. They had also taken out my appendix because it had a growth on it. And so I woke up in a considerable amount of pain. That week that I spent in the hospital, I was devastated. I mean, I was crushed, you know the odds going into it, you know, like they told me 80% chance of reoccurrence, right? But I think in your heart, you always think, okay, I'm going to be that 20%. I got this, right? And then to find out that you don't got this as much as you think you got this, it was soul crushing. I didn't get out of the hospital bed for a week. I didn't want to see anybody. I didn't want to talk to my friends. I didn't want to talk to my family. I couldn't life, you know. It's like, and that's one of the other things I would say is that, you know, I think the way that I was brought up anyways is you're expected to hold everything together. You have to run a household. You have to hold it together for your children. You have to hold it together for your spouse. You have to hold it together for your family and for your friends. I couldn't hold it together.
That fake it till you make it mentality can only last for so long.
That's right. And I didn't even want to try. I didn't have the energy for it. My oncologist, they took that and went to the board and he said, I'm going to take this to the board and I'm going to see if they've got any suggestions and I'll come back to you to see with what they think we should do with your case. I went back to MD Anderson. I found that there was, and the person I was seeing at MD Anderson was fabulous, but I did find that there was someone at MD Anderson who specialized in my type of cancer. And there were two of them, actually. There was a man who's been doing it for almost 30 or 40 years. I can't remember how long, very long time, very knowledgeable. And then he has somebody who's kind of grooming as his successor. And so I went and saw her. She's a younger doctor. You know, she's only been in practice maybe 5 years. But I knew that I wanted something different and I knew that I wanted to try something different. And so I went to her and it took a lot. They don't like you switching between their doctors because they think it causes infighting. So I had to call patient advocacy, but I think that it was what I needed to do that was best for me.
A lot of parents get weary of just that. What we've heard is just when you're not battling the insurance, it's advocating for appointment times or switching with communication between multiple offices.
Yep.
And it's all a headache, but it's important work and it's literally the work of your life.
It can be. And I think that's so frustrating because fighting cancer shouldn't have to be a full-time job in just bureaucracy. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's so frustrating that it almost zaps your will to live. You know, you're already fighting something that is so unmeasurable, so overwhelming, so soul crushing that to have to sit and argue continuously on the phone with people is annoying to say the least. And it really shouldn't be like that. So what I did actually is I told you my grandmother, she's my rock. And, you know, everybody always asks, how can I help? I gave her the information. I said, call these people. And she did. And that was something that she could do for me. And she was happy to do it. And it was such a relief to me to not always have to be the person arguing. So if you have that network, if you have people who are offering to help and you don't mind them doing so in that way, then I would definitely say to you guys, don't feel bad leveraging it because sometimes you just don't have the strength.
Did you just have to put her as basically a person on your paperwork who you could share your information with for her to be able to do that?
Yeah, absolutely. So at MD Anderson in particular, you can do that from your MyChart portal. You just have to add them on as a person, like you said, who can have those conversations for you. And it doesn't give them any control over your medical decisions. It doesn't give them any control into anything that you decide to do. It only allows them to communicate on your behalf.
So you switched over to this new team.
Yep.
And then did they change the plan for your treatment?
Yeah. So she actually said, I said, okay, here's what my oncologist that I was seeing in Austin, here's what they recommend. She presented it to the board and she came back and she said, actually, I recommend you do nothing. And I said, I'm sorry, what? She said, no. She said, you're on an estrogen blocker right now. Started the estrogen blocker. She said, I think that's your best course of action for right now. We consider estrogen blocker, even though it doesn't seem like much, to be an oral form of chemotherapy. And she said, I've seen it keep the cancer at bay for years. And she told me, at this point, your cancer is metastatic and it's not curable. And I just about had heart failure and fell on the floor when she said that word, metastatic. And I said, what do you mean metastatic? I said, it is in my abdomen. It's in the same place it's always been in my abdomen. It hasn't gone anywhere else. What do you mean metastatic? And she said, well, if it's in more than one organ or it's grown through things like your appendix or your cervix or whatever else, then we consider it to be spread, even if it's not in your lymph nodes or even if it's not wherever else. So she said, that's what we consider to be metastatic. And I said, well, okay, I don't like that word, but okay, whatever. That was a tough pill to swallow for sure, because the idea of doing quote unquote nothing is so hard for me. So hard for me. Her logic made sense. The idea that if I have, once I came around to the idea that the cancer wasn't curable, if you have disease that's not curable, it makes sense in her mind, and it did make sense to me also, to save those heavier treatments that are so taxing on your body and your spirit for further down the road when you really need them because the cancer is growing and you can't, you have to have something. So she said, you know, people can live a long time with a tiny bit of cancer. Just keep doing what you're doing. Stay healthy. And when it starts to grow again, then we'll switch you to something heavier. It has been since January of this year. It seems to be working. So now I go for scans every 3 months. I will tell you, it does not get any easier. Coming on almost 4 years, I'm still a nervous wreck leading into every scan. But I just go for a scan. They take a look at it. They tell me, has it gotten bigger? Has it gotten smaller? Has it whatever? And then we have a conversation and go for there. I've been super fortunate that it hasn't gotten any bigger. So I'm still holding steady right where I am. And I try to, as much as possible, keep my body healthy and my spirit healthy through meditation and downtime, as I said before, and therapy and all those other things, hanging out with my girlfriends, the things that recharge us. So I try to keep my body and my spirit healthy in the meantime, because I know eventually I probably will need more chemo.
It's been 4 years. Mm-hmm. How do you feel like their understanding of what's happening with you has changed?
Yeah, so hugely, especially my youngest, you know, starting out at 1 and growing to 4, you know, he'll never in his lifetime know a time when mom didn't have cancer. We decided up front we were going to tell them, and we even told them the first time around, you know, like, mom has cancer, here's what it means. And it was super scary for them, because I can remember we had another little girl come over and she was playing with my daughter. They're both 5 at this point. And she said, your mommy has cancer. Your mommy's going to die. My grandpa had cancer and he died. And that's a young person's mind, right? You know, they know only their experience. She didn't mean it maliciously, but it was very scary for my daughter. Children are wise. And they see that something's going on. Even if they don't know what's going on, they see the stress, they see the tension. I always wanted to give her the benefit of being able to talk about what was going on and to be upfront with her. So that night we sat and we talked, and I said, mom may die from cancer. Like, it does happen. People die from cancer. And I said, and that would be a terrible, horrible thing. And I hope it never, ever, ever happens. But if I get sick enough, something is going to happen. You will know about it first. We will talk to you about it. I promise you right now that I'm here for you. If you need to talk about it, if you're worried about it, I want to tell you I'm worried about it too. But I'm here and I am fighting, and I will fight tooth and nail to make sure that I am here for you. I will do anything in my power and to make sure that I'm here for you as long as I can possibly be. And if at any point something happens, then you'll be the first to know about it, and we're going to talk about it. I don't want you to worry. That's my approach. And I don't know if it works for everyone, but I will say that Wonders and Worries definitely very much helped us with all of that. They're there for those tough conversations. And even when I don't know the right words to say, or, you know, my daughter is being a little bit more apprehensive or clingy when I leave to go to Houston for an appointment, you know, like I can reach out to our child life specialist and I can say, hey, here's what's going on. What advice do you have? And they've been through this. They've been through this with countless families, and they know, based off of their research, based off of their years of experience, here's some options. Here's some things that you can say to help them feel better. Here's some things that they can do. My husband and I still talk about this. Well, the difference between before we took our kids to Wonders and Worries and afterwards, that first session, our daughter walking out, she looked like a weight had been lifted off of her chest. I mean, I saw her smile, like a true ear-to-ear smile, and I realized I hadn't seen her smile in months because she was just so anxious and worried about it. And I would say that now, kind of growing up through it, you know, like we still talk about it every day. It's all still a very open process in our family. But I think that it's one of those things, like I said, for me, I try not to let cancer define us. It impacts us, but it's not the sum total of who I am. And I don't want that for my daughter, for my son either. You know, like, yes, their mom has cancer, but that's not all their mom has. You know, she's also Spitfire. So,
which is good. Yeah. Last question.
Yep.
Anything I did not mention that you wanted to share? Anything that you wanted to share to somebody who may be facing recurrent cancer or new to their first initial diagnosis?
So, I think a couple things. Number one is, probably the best thing that I learned the first time I had cancer was Urban Decay makes an amazing eyebrow pencil.
Because that's important.
It is so important to someone who has no eyebrows. I looked at tattoos. I looked at, did you know they make stick-on fluffy eyebrows made out of real hair?
I sure do. Now I do because of what we do, but yes.
I looked at all those things, and I will tell you, number one tip, Urban Decay has a fabulous eyebrow pencil, and it's got a pencil on one end and a paintbrush on the other, so it gives you a very natural look. So
that's awesome.
So that was definitely my favorite find. But I would just say, again, you know, like, go easy on yourself. You know, you don't have to be perfect. People make connections when they see the humanness in others. So if anything, you being human and you being imperfect and you having a day where you just can't fake it anymore will endear those other people to you, because they will respect you for how real you're being. And if they don't, then they're not friends of yours. Just love yourself. Go easy. Take lots of breaks. Say no. And oh, by the way, when you say no, you don't have to have an excuse to say no. You can just say, no, I'm sorry, it doesn't work for me. Let's do it another day. You don't have to tell them why. I think really keep yourself surrounded by people you love and keep doing the things that you love to do. And don't be hard on yourself.
Thank you for tuning in to our podcast today. Please subscribe and continue to check back as our content is ever evolving. For questions or specific content-related requests, please send an email to podcast@wondersandworries.org.